Now it's time for very serious football talk with the man who met his wife on a blind date, chaperoned by his parents.
They actually came along on the first date with us. That was a...
No!
I rode in the back seat. I was 22.
The man who needs to take a minute to remember the names of all of his children.
Do all of your kids have the same first letter?
No, actually. Let me think. Do any of them? Tucker, Mason, Cole, Isabel, and Lucas.
The man who can defend you in court, but will probably choose not to.
I'll capture this on a public setting right now. I am an aggressive cuddler in a consensual sense.
Comma, officer.
Good grief, he's a pastor too? When does this guy sleep?
You will find Seth Kaiser everywhere except for in his or your bed, because not only does he not sleep, he's also a faithful husband. So that's important.
It's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on Almost Entirely Sports.
I don't want to hear one single peep about how today's not Tuesday. I don't want to hear it. We had things happen, okay? And we're bringing you Seth Kaiser this week. That, I don't know what else you could possibly ask for. Seth Kaiser of The Athletic with us here today. I was going to say in the flesh. That's not true. In the digital phone space. But still here on a Thursday. Seth, thank you so very much for so graciously bending your schedule to our will.
I was told it would be Tuesday, so I think I need to go. But
you passed the test. It is till Tuesday, and I'll tell you any other information. I'll give you another special clue at the end of the segment.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Yes, it's no problem. AFC Championship Week, man. We are all. Last week, I wasn't in my playoff best. You know, I was laying down on a bed while we did our segment. I was not ready to roll. I was not at 100%.
Yeah.
But now I am at 100%. I'm giving it my playoff best, and I am again laying in a bed. So
I will say that just these few days, talking to you on a Thursday is different. Talking to you after the week of AFC Championship game coverage out at Arrowhead, I've been out there the last 2 days in the big room, and then in the work room, and then more big room tomorrow. It's a lot. I'm tired. So I'm glad you brought the.
Sure.
I'm glad you feel at your championship best, because I'm ready to take a nap after the show tonight. By nap, I just mean go to bed, I guess.
Sure. Just actually go to bed. Yeah. So, is the workroom at Arrowhead as awesome as the workroom at St. Joseph's that I definitely haven't seen?
Yeah, you would not have been allowed to, and therefore haven't seen it. It's a bunch of tables, you know, all shoved together, and then there's some food and a generally limitless amount of coffee. Although today the coffee was very bad, and so I went to the green tea route, and I've enjoyed my little coffee diversion today. But yeah, it's fun because it also, you know, brings all of these media folks that we all interact with a little bit here and there all together. And that's a sneaky fun part of all of this that you don't get to experience unless you come down for training camp and then definitely have never broken any rules.
Yes, absolutely. I have always followed every rule to its absolute letter of the law, which actually that's technically true. So I follow the rules. If someone tells me not to do something, I don't do that thing. Like, if they hadn't mentioned to not do other things, I might do those things. But no one told me not to do those things. So,
tell me. Were you the kid in the back of the car just always wanting to poke, you know, just like, hey, don't, Seth, don't do that, Seth? Like, you always ready to roll down the window or something?
No, but that's only because the authority figures who are now in my life don't discipline the way my dad did, so I lack that same abject terror that I had of violating rules at that point in my life. Now, you know, the worst thing that might happen is someone might look upset.
That, you know, I think that this is a good, quick little life lesson. Go ahead and break some rules if the consequences aren't that dire. It's okay. What are they going to do? Look at you funny?
This has gone askew, as it were.
You're a lawyer. You're not telling people to break the legal law. Just let, you know, if the sign says keep off the grass and you want to walk on the grass, go ahead and walk on the grass.
Right. So here's the real lesson. Your willingness to obey authority figures should have some sort of correlation with their willingness, ability, and permission to physically harm you. I feel like that's a great life lesson, you know, because on one hand, so yes, if someone tells you to get off the grass and that person lacks the willingness or the ability or the permission to harm you, no, whatever. If they have two of the three, you should at least think about it. If they have three of the three, that's when you're in trouble. So, no, if Joe Law tells you to get off the grass, you probably should, because no one needs to get pepper sprayed.
That's true. Oh, by the way, do you want to do you want to make a moment here? You mentioned pepper spray.
Sure.
You mentioned pepper spray, and I.
Oh
say,
no! What are you about to do to yourself?
I don't want to bleep with pepper spray. I don't. But I have really gone confident on Chiefs Titans, and so I wasn't going to bring this up, but then you mentioned, you know, ability and willingness and permission to harm. If you supply a non-lethal taser, and next time you next time you're in Kansas City and the Chiefs lose to the Titans, I'm willing to put the taser bet on the Chiefs beating the Titans in the AFC Championship game.
Okay, just to be clear, this is a taser bet that just involves you, right? It's not like if they win, I get tased. This is just if they lose to the Titans, you get tased. If they win, we all celebrate.
Yeah, I'm willing to do it.
This sounds, yes.
Yeah.
Man, you just made my day. So no matter what happens this weekend, my life is going to be significantly better.
That's correct. And so this is sort of me trying to give whatever the opposite of mutually assured destruction is. I'm trying to give mutually assured joy to the Chiefs kingdom in general, that either the Chiefs are going to the Super Bowl or the next time Seth Kizer is in town, he's going to tase me.
Let me ask you a question. You've really gone with this taser thing.
Yeah.
Have you thought about doing something maybe a little less extreme? Like, I just get to slap you as hard as I possibly can?
I think you could do, like, damage to my jaw or my teeth or something.
I would not. No, I'd hit your ear. But that's a whole other ball of wax.
Yeah, it would be a lot of wax that would be impounded on the eardrum.
Okay, I'm just making sure, because tasers can be dangerous. And so I just thought, and plus, I couldn't slap you. You remember my brother-in-law, Jason? I'd have him slap you.
I would rather you shoot me.
Yeah, for those who don't know, my brother-in-law, Jason, like when we had lunch at Q39 and Mitch Schwartz sat by us.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't tell that much of a difference in terms of size. Jason's a big fella.
Yeah, I would not want to be hit by him.
Yeah, he's so lucky he wouldn't fight me back in the day. Sorry, we've gone far afield. But yes, it's a taser bet. I'm excited for this.
All right, this is it then.
And you can trust me. You can trust me to be judicious with my tasing.
Yeah, so there are two things that would have been smart for me. If you were my lawyer, I would expect you to try to have this conversation before I agreed to this plea bargain, but I'm here already. There's like the taser that shoots out that like also has all the little confetti and everything. And those are like a little bit expensive as well, I think. And so if you end up going like handheld taser and just don't do it directly on my heart in a way that could kill me,
No, of course not.
I trust the way in which you would give out the tasering. And also, I really think the Chiefs are going to beat the Titans.
I think they're going to beat the Titans too. And I have no interest in Nate and I having to do a special edition of Times Ours in which I have to explain that I killed you with a taser.
The in memoriam episode of Times Ours.
It would start off, you know, I will remember you. Welcome to a very special episode of Times Ours where we remember Josh Briscoe.
And then also recap the worst loss in Chiefs history.
Yeah, everyone would be bummed about two things.
Yeah, well,
so, at least
one thing,
and I'm confident too.
I think that we should be confident. We talk about the game in just a second. So that's officially there. Then I'll say it now here for all to hear. If the Chiefs lose to the Titans on Sunday, next time Seth is in town, he can administer the tase,
which will be incredibly soon. If that's the case.
You will road trip down on Monday. excellent.
I don't have any court Monday. I'm not busy.
The other thing is, I think my real concern is if I make a stupider version of that bet for the Super Bowl, back in that idea of mutually assured joy. Like, I just don't want there to be nothing but sadness sweeping over the community. So maybe I don't know. But this week, this week,
here's something worth considering, though.
One game at a time.
You've done two taser bets during the course of this season.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
and both times have resulted in big, important things for the Chiefs.
It's true.
And so if they win with your third taser bet, that, and then you don't make a taser bet, and they lose, someone may just tase you anyway.
That's true. We're back to the willingness and permission and ability to harm me. It's just going to be an entire city with tasers. Fair enough.
So, I'm excited, and I think you have every right to be confident.
I really am.
I think the Titans are a good team. But, you know the team that the Chiefs just absolutely shellacked in the first round?
Mm-hmm.
They split this year with the Titans.
They did.
And so it's not like the Titans are this unbeatable force. I get they've won a few games in a row. They've done a great job. I mean, man, they beat the Ravens. Good on them. That is awesome. But at the end of the day, the Chiefs are the better team, and they should win, barring some weird stuff.
And you mentioned Times Are. I imagine everyone hearing this now probably knows, but Mondays and Fridays on The Athletic, it's me and Seth Kaiser and Nate Taylor all doing Times Are. It's a podcast. And Monday episodes are free for everybody. Fridays, just for subscribers of The Athletic. We will have one tomorrow morning. And if you're not subscribed at this point, like, I don't know what you're doing. Like, you're missing so much stuff. And that's obviously continuing throughout championship week. But looking now, we can look ahead. We can look back. Let's do ourselves the favor of looking at the Titans first this week, just because last week we did very much the opposite. Let's look ahead here first. We had conversations about the Texans last week where we were saying, you know, you can look back to the game from earlier in the season. The Chiefs lost to the Texans, but man, those teams are very, very different. The teams aren't as different. Whenever you look back to Chiefs-Titans, that game was a level of weird that I think would be hard to replicate.
Yes, and the Chiefs have played a few weird games against the Titans, and I know that has some people spooked. I can understand that. You know, you've got the Mariota pass to himself and the forward progress call from the 17 playoffs. They've played weird games against the Titans before that, and then obviously earlier this season, they had a weird game, but a few things to note. While the Chiefs were definitely healthier than they were against the Texans, it's worth noting that against the Titans, they still did not have left tackle Eric Fisher, who I think finally, now after this season, after everything that's happened, I think this is the year that fans are finally going to, like, forgive him for being first overall, as though that was his fault.
Right.
And actually acknowledge, hey, you know what? Eric Fisher's a good left tackle.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Is he? You know, is he Trent Williams? No. Is he good? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Does he make a difference? Absolutely. And all you need to do is look at the splits with and without him. Now, obviously, there's a lot of context there, but they are a better team with him, and that makes a huge difference for them schematically in what they can dial up. It's just a big deal. And beyond that, like you said, the weirdness, the chances of the Chiefs having a muffed dropped field goal by Colquitt, is that, I think that's the only time that's happened, right?
This season,
ever?
For sure. In the whole, like, battery of Winchester and Colquitt, it wouldn't surprise me.
I can't recall that ever happening before. A blocked kick, which they've had, like, two field goals blocked, like, ever? You need a block kick, then a muffed kick. So the muffed kick was required for the Titans to be able to take the lead. The block kick was where the Chiefs couldn't tie it up,
because
they'd marched down the field a little bit.
Yep.
And then the Chiefs still win that game if it's not for a fumble that's returned for six. So unless you see that same level of weird, also Tannehill played one of his best games of his life.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot that happened that game. That could it happen again? Of course. It's the NFL. You don't get to the AFC Championship by being a bad team. The Titans are not just lucky. They are a good team. But there's a lot going on there.
They also, on the Chiefs' second drive of that game, was the first of many field goals they settled for. They were on the 12-yard line. It was 4th and 2. They should have gone for it there, and in retrospect, like if you convert that and that's a touchdown instead of a field goal, that changes things. That's totally within their control after they forced a fumble on a few plays. And there were all of these field goals, and not all of them are horrible decisions. I'm not really here to go through play-by-play of that right now. But with all of those, I mean, there's also the 4th and 3 in field goal range that they did kick for. So, I mean, yeah, they're not all great, not all the worst. But whenever you see all of those times that the offense settled, I don't think they would be in that spot all that often again. And second of all, I think that there's at least a reasonable argument that the Chiefs' offense is maybe a little more likely to be a little more aggressive this week. And you can take that back to the Texans game if you want. They obviously needed to be aggressive through that insane second quarter, but they stayed pretty aggressive through the third and even the beginning of the fourth.
Yeah, they definitely didn't let up. They finally, like in the fourth quarter, or especially like late in the third and in the fourth, they started running the ball again a little, mm-hmm. and then they had a drive where they ran the ball a bunch of times, very successfully. Mm-hmm. It's worth noting mm-hmm. with Damian Williams. They are a more aggressive team. This was Mahomes' first game back from his knee injury,
yeah.
And even though he played absolutely brilliantly, you can't tell me that didn't factor into some of Reed's decisions on fourth down, because did you notice on some of these third down conversions that they had in the red zone against the Texans, the call was rolling Mahomes out?
They did a lot of that, it seemed like. Yeah, you mm-hmm. have the specifics, and you can read Seth's article about Mahomes against the Texans up on The Athletic now. But I watch that in real time. Man, they're moving Mahomes around a lot, and not necessarily because they didn't trust the line, but because they felt like that was a strength again.
Right, they saw some schematic advantage there. I'm not really sure if it resulted in a schematic advantage because it required Mahomes to make unbelievable plays.
True, yeah.
But him being out in space, it's just this natural advantage because you don't have anyone in his passing lane, right?
Yeah.
And so he can throw wherever he wants. And that's where you see Kelce just like, oh, hey, why don't I just take a couple steps to the right? Oh, look, there's no one here. And then Mahomes finds him. So the fact that the Titans got to play a Mahomes who looked fine but was definitely moving just a little bit differently, and now he's playing the best football of his career, and they're coming. This is just not a great thing for the Titans, I think, the way the Chiefs game went down on Sunday, because had the Chiefs just blown out the Texans right out of the gate, maybe you can hope on some overconfidence or some, you know, whatever, taking things for granted. But they got to experience for a full quarter and change that gut-wrenching feeling of, holy crap, it's over. Like,
yeah.
Wow, I didn't think this could happen to us. And that's a good thing. I really think that's a good thing that they experienced that. I think just like it's a good thing all the injuries they've gone through this year, this Chiefs team has been through a lot of crap.
Yeah.
And I think that's not great news for the Titans, because now it's also, even if the Titans get like a 14-0 lead, even if they're like, oh, they're running it down our throat, they've got this 14-0 lead, the Chiefs are going to be like, so?
Yeah.
We can score 21 points in 3 minutes and 24 seconds.
Yep.
So even if you're leading 14-0 after 3 quarters, guess what? We're fine.
Yep. On the running it down their throats lane, I've talked about this, I've not written about this and all of that, but I want you to talk about Derrick Henry. I made the joke today at Arrowhead of somebody had mentioned covering the Titans. I said, well, how many reporters do they need to cover one coach and one player? Because I'm pretty sure that's what that entire team is at this point. Like, A.J. Brown, no one's talked about for the entire playoffs, and that is a little weird and makes me a little nervous. But Derrick
right.
Henry has been the topic of conversation all week, strangely on a national level, sometimes more than what the Chiefs did, which is whatever. What do you see whenever you look at Derrick Henry in this game?
Derrick Henry's a really good running back. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about this. He showed that when the Chiefs played the Titans last time. If he can find a crease and he builds up a head of steam, we watched him outrun secondary players
yep.
the first time they played.
Yep.
He's having an incredible playoff. This is so obvious. The conversation that more people should be having And this might be what I write about tomorrow. I'm not sure yet. I'm still kind of looking at a few things. The conversation that people should really be having, though, is about the Titans' defense. And I know we'll get into one thing after another, so I'll set that up here. Let me just put it this way. Derrick Henry running the ball for 180 yards on its own isn't going to tell me much about whether or not the Titans win that game.
Yep.
It certainly doesn't hurt the Titans, but I don't know how much it helps them.
Yep.
I mean, it'll depend on number of carries, the context of them, but mostly it'll depend on their defense, because he could run for 180 yards and they still only put up, 14 points on offense like they did against the Patriots.
Right.
And I got to tell you, unless their defense is lights out, that's not going to be good enough.
Yep.
And so, Derrick Henry, really good running back. I think he's good enough to move the needle a little bit, but he needs the entire team to show up for them to win in that fashion. They pounded teams in dust. Well, no, their defense has been great.
Yep,
that's the biggest thing. Their defense has just been excellent. And so Henry, while I'm worried about him to an extent, and if Tennessee gets the ball first. I don't think it would be a bad idea if Tennessee wins the toss for them to take the ball,
mm-hmm.
similar to what Houston did,
mm-hmm.
and just say, we can't fall behind. We need to take the ball, and we need to run it, 15 times and really just try to sap the energy from the crowd and all that. It can help them, but it's just, I'm not that worried about it. I'm just not. Now, is there a chance that he goes off and, sets a record and runs for 270 yards? Sure, I guess. But unless he does that, Derrick Henry will not be the deciding factor of that game.
100% agree. Whenever you look at the other thing, sort of a counter-argument in there a little bit, I guess, is maybe it's a counter-question, is how good can the Titans' offense be in a situation, in a context that you think does have a chance to beat the Chiefs? What does that look like to you?
If Tannehill's sticking his throws. Tannehill made some really nice throws against the Chiefs this last time they played, in the first half and in the fourth quarter. And if he's sticking his throws down the field and giving A.J. Brown a chance at some stuff, that allows them, in conjunction with the run game. See, now that's where the run game can hurt you more if the passing game is working. Right?
It's also then what gave them an early lead against the Ravens, and with some turnovers,
right.
It was 14-0. Yeah.
Right, and so people talk about the Titans' passing game a certain way. They're not afraid to throw the ball down the field, and they've had a lot of success with it. There's a reason, Ryan Tannehill, at the close of the season, was, one of the highest-rated quarterbacks in Pro Football Focus, and he was an analytics darling.
Yep.
Because he wasn't throwing the ball much, which helps,
mm-hmm.
and he was throwing the ball down the field with a lot of success. And so if they're able to hit some big plays down the field, then you can maybe start getting that combination of you got to keep two safeties deep, but you also got to kind of try to load up the box. Then you can do some things with that balanced offense,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Balance is good. And that's where, people, you and I always joke around that the run game doesn't matter. And people say, is a balanced offense not a good thing? No, that's not what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much more important to throw the ball well. But if you throw the ball well and you run the ball well, then you're cooking. And so if Tannehill is sticking some throws down the field, that will help them, absolutely, because it will – I'm assuming the Chiefs are going to do something similar to what the Patriots did and say, you know what, we are comfortable letting Henry run. Now, the Chiefs have talked a lot about stopping Henry this week.
Mm-hmm.
But
they've also been asked a lot about stopping Henry this week, just for the record, not to be super self-aggrandizing, but I think that I'm the only person in two full days that asked about A.J. Brown.
Right.
It's been a lot of it.
So they're getting asked a lot about him.
Yeah.
I'm curious, because Spagnuolo's a smart guy, and he has done some things that make you think that he recognizes what's important.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing is, if you stop their passing game and you make it not really much of a palatable option, it's almost impossible to beat the Chiefs' offense with just a run game. Mm-hmm. Again, unless your defense shows up and plays crazy good, which, to be fair to them, they have. 2 weeks in a row, they've been excellent. So that's the real matchup to me. That's what's going to decide the game. It'll be the Titans' defense against the Chiefs' offense. I don't see Tannehill going shot for shot with Mahomes the way that even Watson could.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see it. So they're going to have to slow the Chiefs' offense down.
And that actually, the idea of a running game being incapable of single-handedly beating the Chiefs, that's an article that Seth wrote a while back in The Athletic that I actually linked back to in my post that's up there now. And all of that is, if you subscribe to The Athletic, it all unlocks immediately, including Times Ours on Mondays and Fridays up on The Athletic. Seth, we need to take a break. Do you have a few seconds to hold on, and we can talk about Frank Clark and more Patrick Mahomes and then more about you tasing me?
I absolutely can talk about all of those things, and I have one more thing to add about the whole run game thing in my previous article.
Outstanding. That's a radio tease. That is a radio professional, Seth Kaiser of The Athletic.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Do we have anything to talk about this week? It is just, man, it's been a slow news weekend. It's Tuesday, therefore, it's Seth Kaiser time. Beers, I need you to cut the music. Thank you. I was stalling until you would cut the music, and you just took so long, even after previously having a discussion about cutting the music. Seth, will you yell at Beards for me?
With Joshua Briscoe.
Beards, I don't want to say you're a terrible person, but I'm not going to say you're not a terrible person. That's, you know.
Thank you.
I'm 50-50. I'm on the fence. We'll see what happens with the music next time.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Double dose of Seth Kaiser of The Athletic. Yeah, we did it a couple of days late, so we're giving you two segments. Shut up. Be grateful. Eat your vegetables. Seth Kaiser with us, still here on Almost Entirely Sports. Was that too harsh?
That was a little harsh.
You can read everything that he does up on The Athletic, and again, Mondays and Fridays is Times Ours with me, Seth, and Nate Taylor. A handful of things I still want to get to, talking about the game we're all looking forward to here this weekend, but you gave us a radio tease. You got that time spent listening, that TSL heat. What else is there about the running game that you wanted to touch on, kind of in conjunction with your article from earlier in this season about how beating the Chiefs with the running game is a fool's errand?
Right. So I wrote about that, and it was really funny because it was one of the most, probably drew more subscriptions and more views than almost anything else I've written all year, because it challenges people's conceptions about the game. And I just wrote, you know, beating the Chiefs with the run game is a fool's errand. And I want to make something very clear, because I've had people since that article came out, people, well, yeah, well, look what the Colts did. You know, they beat them with just the running game. And, see, I always do that mean voice for people that argue with me, and that is not fair. But that's how I imagine them in my head, so there you go.
It's fair but not kind, is what I would argue.
Yeah, it's fair but not kind. So the reality is simple. The run game cannot beat the Chiefs unless your defense plays awesome.
Yeah.
If your defense plays really well, or like, you know, Mahomes is hurt like the Colts game, you know, and all these weird things go wrong, then yes, the run game can beat the Chiefs. But it's not really the run game that's beating the Chiefs then, it's the defense. Because let me just tell you, there's no run game in the league that unless the Chiefs' the offense gets shut down, there's no run game that's good enough to make it to where the Chiefs only get seven possessions in a game. It's not going to happen unless the Chiefs' offense stinks up the joint or gets shut down. So that's the caveat there. So keep an eye on that. If the Texans' defense plays really well, like holds the Chiefs to like 17 or something, and they win 20-17, I guarantee you the narrative will be, oh, the dominant ground attack. And it'll be just as wrong as it is this week about the Titans beating Baltimore.
Yes. It'll be they kept Mahomes off the field.
Yeah. He only had 11 possessions as opposed to their check notes, normal 11 possessions.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that. That's actually something Eric Bieniemy did mention today a little bit, was being something about being effective or being efficient when they do have the ball. That is true. That is accurate. Making about how long they have the ball is completely ridiculous, but I digress. I think that we've appropriately just beaten the ever-living hell out of the time of possession conversation on this show. But if you're new, it doesn't matter. And if you think it does matter, Seth personally thinks less of you as a human being. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yes, you can confirm that through Josh's DMs.
Oh, no, please don't. You wrote about Frank Clark earlier this week up on The Athletic. And
I did.
He's been a fascinating story. And Nate Taylor also had an article about Frank Clark a little over a week ago that's a totally different look and very, very interesting as well. But he's been fascinating because he was the big acquisition of the offseason. He underperformed early. We then found out that he was in part underperforming because he said he was at like 25% health or something, with a pinched nerve and numb fingers and felt like his neck was on fire or whatever. And then he gets sick and now we're here. So the journey of Frank Clark has been really fascinating to me. Just in terms of perception. Now you've taken a look at him and found what?
I just took an up-close look at the game against Houston because everyone sees, well, he had three sacks, and one of them was right at the end of the game, so it's not quite as big a deal. But people see those things. What I wanted to show was he was impacting the game all game long, not just when he brought Watson to the ground. Mm-hmm. He was chasing him off his spot. He was helping other guys get pressure. There was just a lot going on there. And I wanted to show that Clark is now winning with power moves as well as with speed. All season, it's mostly been either, you know, finesse moves, a speed rush, or a spin move. Because, again, you know, his shoulder, his neck, he just wasn't healthy. Now he's utilizing, you know, a club. He's utilizing a long arm. He's utilizing a bull rush. He's utilizing a push-pull. He has a plethora of pass rush moves, and he's back to playing at a very, very high level. And that's just great news for the Chiefs because without him, they just don't have any pass rush.
Yeah.
Against the Texans on Sunday.
Yeah.
And without Chris Jones, they needed someone to step up huge, and he did. And so it has been a fascinating journey. I would argue that even if the Chiefs' playoff run were to end on Sunday, despite everything, the early thing, I think the Frank Clark signing was still a success due to what he's done down the stretch. Because how well he's played for the last half of the season. And I think his play earlier in the season was a little underrated, even though he was not nearly as good as he is now. He was still competent, and he helped. But over the last half of the season, there are several games I don't think they win without Clark being as good as he's been.
I mean, I was going to ask you to try to quantify it in a way, and that will do, actually. You beat me to it. Can you try to dig in a little more on what you just said about doing it without Chris Jones, saying that they would have no pass rush without Frank Clark out there as they've been in the absence of Chris Jones? And then also, I know this is kind of a weird time to look ahead to an off season whenever we're days away from an AFC championship game, but has the last did the Houston game, whenever you really dug into Clark and the pass rush, did that do anything to move the needle or reaffirm anything for you regarding the Chiefs and Frank Clark, the Chiefs and Chris Jones?
It reaffirmed to me that Chris Jones is a huge part of the defense. His pass rush is wildly important, and without him, they have no one that can do remotely what he does. Maybe Colin Saunders in a year or two, but so far he hasn't shown a ton of pass rush, and they just don't have anyone that can do what Jones does. Now, to be fair, against Houston, it was a little bit of a weird game because most of the other guys besides Clark were clearly being told to play contain, mm-hmm. and to kind of mind their pass rush lane so that Watson couldn't get loose and run around.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got a lot of people, oh, Terrell Suggs is getting stonewalled all game. It's like, well, no, just watch what he's doing. If he's got his arms on both sides of the tackle, and it almost looks like he's two-gapping.
Yeah.
He's not really trying to rush the passer.
Yeah.
I've had people get that wrong for years, talking to me, oh, this guy got stonewalled. No, he's not really trying to rush the passer. He's making sure he doesn't lose contain. So, you know, they'd still generate some pass rush with, you know, blitzing, et cetera, that kind of thing. But they don't have anyone that can do what Chris Jones does. And I don't know what amount they're at. I know Sam's reported. I am pretty sure Nate's reported. I know Therez has reported that the team wants him back badly and that he wants to be with the team badly, but it's just a money issue because it's a huge contract. I don't know where the division is, but, I mean, I personally would hand him $20 million a year tomorrow.
That's a lot of money. I mean, my hesitance doesn't come with your evaluation of Chris Jones. It's just – that's a lot of money on a defensive line. And I don't know, maybe this is a place where I need to evolve a little bit because it seems like Chris Jones and Frank Clark are both worth the individual contracts that Clark is already getting and the one that Chris Jones will ultimately get from somewhere. But it makes me really nervous about the rest of the defense, honestly.
Sure. And that I can understand that. that's definitely an issue to be considered. I just think that as you go through, you and I have talked about this before. For one, I think the salary cap is kind of fake numbers.
Yeah.
I think if you sign Chris Jones now, mm-hmm. whatever CBA agreement they come to, it would not surprise me one bit if the cap number, rather than shooting up the usual $10 million it does every year, it would not surprise me one bit if, let's say, you know, the owners give a concession of like 1% of the revenue or something, which
yeah.
I know is hard to believe could possibly happen,
yeah.
but it could.
Yeah.
If they give a concession of just 1% extra of the revenue, the cap's going to just shoot up.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, a contract that looked huge doesn't look so bad.
Yeah.
So there's that to consider. And then I would just say it's not about how much money you pay. It's about who you pay.
Mm-hmm.
There are other players on the team that they are currently paying more than they're worth.
True.
With Chris Jones, you're paying an elite player elite money. That's almost never a problem. The times teams get into problems is when they pay non-elite players elite money.
It's a good point. All right, I can live with that. We'll allow that for now at least, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to talk about the two of them together and Chris Jones' offseason, but I wanted to take a second to look at that. And then also, we touched on it a little bit in the first segment, but you looked at Patrick Mahomes against the Texans in an in-depth way that I don't know if – maybe it's just the stakes and the number that they overcame – but watching in real time and then going through your article, it seems like this is going to be a Mahomes game that we can look back to for a very, very long time for a variety of reasons.
I agree. I told my kids after we got done watching it, I was pretty excited. And the way I phrased it may have been a little bit I was high on life at the moment.
Sure.
You know, I was flying pretty high.
Sure.
And I was like, man, you know what, guys? Chiefs fans are going to be talking about that game for centuries.
Then
I thought about centuries, and I was like, you know, I mean, let's see. Yeah, okay. Probably not centuries.
Probably not.
Yeah. Like,
decades.
However long,
sure.
you know, football exists, we'll kind of see how all, you know, decades and decades. For sure.
Definitely.
Like, and some of it will depend on how this game ends. But I was just, if the Chiefs go all the way this year and they've got a good chance,
yeah,
that is, like, one of those, like, signature games. And Mahomes has had a zillion signature moments. And he's had so many regular season moments, you know, where the numbers start to kind of blend together, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if that would be the signature game. Because, like, the left-handed throw, the scramble against San Francisco, you know, helping mollywop the Colts in the playoffs. He's had a bunch of big moments.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's had, like, a signature game yet, which is crazy, someone who's been as great as he has. But this felt like a signature game, and he was so good. Like, I wish I had the vocabulary to provide the right adjectives. I mean, because, you know, you eventually run out. And I just I settle it with saying he was as good or not as good. He was better than I've ever seen him. He's had games that have charted out about as good.
Yeah.
But this is where the quantitative stuff, the stuff that you can really chart, doesn't always tell the whole story. Like, his accurate throws were a little more accurate. His inaccurate throws weren't quite as inaccurate. Like, you know what I mean? Like, everything
yeah.
was just a little better. He was just a little better pre-snap. He was just doing everything at such a high level against the Texans. It was about as perfect as it gets for quarterback play. And it was a privilege to watch. And that's why I had to write about him primarily this week for the film review, was just to remind people, look, here's the deal. I get, you know, Lamar Jackson had a great season. He's an excellent player. He's going to be a thorn in the Chiefs' side for years. Deshaun Watson's a great player. Russ Wilson is awesome at football. Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers most of the time. But Patrick Mahomes is the best player in the NFL. And some days, I don't even know if it's that close.
Yeah. The one thing, there's always something like this throughout these articles that Seth does. But the one thing that caught my eye in this one was you talking about the Damian Williams touchdown, like on the hip and everything. And why he put that ball there. Because in real time, I was like, oh, that's a great play by Williams. But really, Mahomes put that ball, you know, in a little bit of a tough spot where he had to kind of come around and pull the ball off of his hip. And that just, that you know, that was very close to going poorly. And you can follow through the article if you go check it out at The Athletic. But you can follow through. Like, nope, that's the ball needed to be. He was right. That was not miscalibrated. He had to go over and under and around and left and right and up and down. And then the ball had to go on his hip, and he put it there. And the stuff like that for me is one of the most valuable things in this ecosystem and having you go back through to chart all these things is because you go, oh, yeah, even the things that are like an A-, it was actually an A+.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest things. When you go back and watch Mahomes on film, he is almost always better than he looks on the broadcast because he catches things and does things in a way that you just miss in real time. And sometimes the Madden cam view and stuff really helps you realize what he's doing. And I can give you two quick examples. So two touchdowns of Travis Kelce of the three. One, you know, where he's going to the left, and everyone's making a big deal that he dragged his foot to stay at the line of scrimmage. Obviously, incredible situational awareness.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. If you look at, like, the real view thing or whatever they use, Mahomes is getting ready to do a shovel pass, and it looks like Kelce should be open, like there's just this straight line view. However, there's a linebacker, I think it's a linebacker, just screaming in from the direction of where he was rushing the passer that's about to run right through the pass lane to where if Mahomes flips it to him, it'll get knocked down or maybe even, like, picked off, right? Mm-hmm. And so Mahomes just holds the ball for just a fraction of a second, lets the guy go running by, and then flips it. Little things like that, you don't even notice in real time how difficult the flip is. And it's just crazy to me, his situational awareness in split seconds. The other one, the touchdown to Kelce that was more in the middle of the field, I didn't realize it when I watched the game live, but when you watch it, and I kind of broke this down frame by frame, he had to create a throwing lane. There were two guys standing in between him and Kelce, and so he kind of like dove and stretched to his right while throwing it to his right. And it was just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
And it's stuff like that happens so frequently. Like you're right. That game was absolute madness. The one other thing that you took some extra time in there, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but you took some time to talk about the pocket presence. We talked about that a few weeks ago, and I know that this is going to like sound defensive and be hard to believe, but I think we were 100% justified to be talking about the pocket presence issue that popped up a few weeks ago. Mahomes was talking about it and working on it. And again, I know this sounds defensive, but I think it was actually an issue. We were all justified to be talking about it, and now we're still paying attention, and now we're all able to look at it and go, oh yeah, he sort of fixed that in like 5 weeks or something, to the point that right now he looks as good manipulating the pocket, not as he's ever looked, but as any quarterback I've ever honestly seen in the pocket has looked.
Yeah, he's doing great things. He went from, and I agree with you, it was an issue that needed to be addressed. Mahomes was talking about it, and it was obvious on film. He was stepping back too far. And you watch him now, he hits the top of his drop, and he almost always takes a step forward.
Yeah.
The moment he hits the top of his drop. That's huge. The reason he doesn't do it every time, but it gives him a moment to see, okay, the edge rushers are going wide, I'll take one step forward, I'll make Mitch and Eric's life easy.
Yep.
And that's what he did time after time. And it just, I have never, and I mentioned this, I was talking to Seren, I think yesterday. I said, I'm not sure I've ever seen a quarterback fix footwork issues and pocket presence issues mid-season.
Yeah.
Like, most quarterbacks are what they are in the pocket.
Yeah.
An example of this, if I want to use a guy that I think is a good quarterback that I really respect, is Alex Smith.
I knew you were going to do that. Alex, whatever you said is going to be a quarterback that I like and really expect and who is very good and handsome and talented. They're like, oh, he's about to contrast Patrick Mahomes with Alex Smith. Uh-oh.
I always want to lay that foundation.
I know.
Because I think, just on a side note, this is why, like, heading into the first year Mahomes was starting, everyone made a big deal about the fact that Travis Kelce was always praising Alex Smith. and, like, wouldn't, like, get too crazy about Mahomes until, like, the season started, basically. And everyone thought it was because Kelce might have, oh, maybe he's got a problem with Mahomes.
That was the worst.
Well, no, it's because Kelce has so much respect for Alex Smith.
Of course.
That's me. I want to be sure that no one's thinking I'm ever trashing the guy. But anyway, Alex, good quarterback, not good pocket presence. Didn't often, he would get happy feet, he would scramble around, he wouldn't help his blockers as much. He's a veteran. He improved in a zillion other areas, but your pocket presence is generally who you are because it's tough. It's kind of like when they try to fix a quarterback's throwing motion. Sure, you can do it the right way in practice hundreds of times, but when you're under live fire and everything is on the line, you're going to revert to what you've been doing for 15 years.
Yeah.
And Mahomes, I mean, midway through the season. Now, I don't know if it's because his knee is feeling so much better or his ankle is feeling so much better or what it is. But he is just he fixed it midseason. Now, we'll see how it looks against the Titans. But for several weeks now, he's just looked excellent in the pocket. And I've never seen a quarterback alter something like that midseason.
It's outstanding. And it's what weirdly, like, especially something I don't think anyone would ever expect in a quarterback's second NFL season, and it makes me continually excited for what the next 10 years of watching this guy play quarterback might hold. It's a good time, Seth. We're here at a good time on this planet Earth.
It is a very good time. One might even say it's a great time to be a Chiefs fan, if one were feeling so inclined. There's an interesting, most quarterbacks peak at like 28, 29, 30.
Yeah.
That's like 4 years away.
I know. When did you peak?
You know, I'm actually one of those people that never peaked, unfortunately.
It's still coming is what it means. It's still coming.
I would say it varies. Physically, I peaked around 18.
Same, yeah, same.
Yeah. In terms of life, I actually think I'm at my peak right now. I mean, life is good, man. Work and family and everything's going as well as ever. So I'm going to go. I'm an eternal peaker, apparently.
Oh, wow. You're just climbing that hill.
Yes.
Always
I went from never peaking to eternally peaking very quickly there.
You have sort of a weird relationship with self-esteem and self-deprecating humor. I've recognized this in you because I recognize it in myself.
Sure. Well, you know, if I say enough mean things about myself, people will say nice things about me,
yeah.
And then it'll be enough, Josh.
Yes.
And then I'll finally have enough approval to lay my head down and sleep at night.
If you would like to validate Seth, you can DM him at RealMNChiefsFan. Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
More football, more sushi, more cocaine, more Almost Entirely Sports.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Sushi sounds excellent.
Anything right now.
Anybody want to make the obvious joke?
I'm hungry.
Nope. Okay, that's fine. Our Chiefs coverage is brought to you by Polzinelli, the law firm solving complex business challenges for more than 40 years. Business has its challenges. You need the team to bring you the real answers. The Polzinelli Law Firm. Does that sound more confident saying the name there? I'm doing my best. Polzinelli. 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 Law Firm. All right, it's been confirmed with Seth, and I've now tweeted about it as well. Seth has now tweeted about it. No matter what happens on Sunday, everyone's a winner, except for me. If the Chiefs lose to the Titans, next time Seth is in town, I bequeath him the power of tasery.
It's like you want this to happen.
If
you keep making this bet.
Here's
like deep down, I think you want to be tased.
Deep down, I want the attention of people watching me.
He wants to feel something.
Yeah.
And that was that's reasonable.
Alive. The pain helps him feel alive.
That's exactly right. I just need anything. But what happened is I said like the phrase, I would literally be shocked if whatever, like if I don't remember what it was. It was like if Mahomes played the next week or something after the injury or something like that. And I said, I didn't really mean literally, but I said literally, so okay, yeah, sure, you can tase me. And then ever since then, I feel like there have been so many people rooting for me to get tased that I've just been kind of swept up in
including
it.
Including me.
Taze. Beards is 100% now rooting for the Chiefs to win.
Yeah, so why don't you guys just chant Titans,
like,
Titans,
I
Titans.
Still want the Chiefs to win, but, like, Beards is all aboard the, come on, Titans. Derrick Henry can take over this game.
I mean, listen, if they make the Super Bowl, I'm going to have 2 weeks of being peer pressured into doing it again against a team that I think would be better than the Titans. So I can only cringe about what that might look like. But they're not going to lose the Titans. And if they are going to lose the Titans,
Josh won't remember it.
I will never, ever forget.
Shock therapy.
It will be shock therapy for me to forget the Chiefs game. That feels about right.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.